It's Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden age. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark LeVanier. Coming up in this hour, drama. Later on, we'll hear the NBC version of Escape from 1944. But right now, it's Stars Over Hollywood from March 27th, 1954 on CBS. Paula Winslow, Les Tremaine, Lou Merrill, and Pat McGeehan join star Phyllis Thaxter in the story Jury of My Peers.
Carnation Evaporated Milk presents A Star, Phyllis Thaxter on Stars Over Hollywood.
All right. So I was tried for murder, a murder I didn't commit. And I was found innocent by a jury of my peers. But that isn't enough. Now I have to be tried all over again by the public.
From Hollywood, California, where the world's favorite stars live and work, the world's favorite evaporated milk brings you transcribed Stars Over Hollywood. Each week, Carnation presents another famous name from motion pictures, television, and radio. Such distinguished performers as Joan Crawford, John Payne, Mitzi Gaynor. Today's star is lovely Phyllis Thaxter. Today's story, Jury of My Peers, is brought to you from Hollywood by Carnation, the milk from contented cows.
Miss Kettmer? Janice?
Oh, Miss Doyle.
It's time, Janice. The jury's coming in. We'll have to go back to the courtroom now, if you're ready.
Yes, I'm ready. I suppose I should comb my hair.
Well, perhaps a little makeup.
So I won't look so pale. I guess you're right.
Janice, for better or worse, this may be the last time we'll be together.
I know. You've been very kind to me, Miss Doyle.
Oh, no. A policewoman can't be kind in a situation like this. But I want you to know, Janice, I'm all for you. No matter what the verdict is, you'll always be one of my favorite people.
Oh, thank you. I wish we could have known each other sooner.
I wish we could have. Well, come on.
Well, it'll be over soon. I guess I should be glad for that. Do you think they'll believe me?
Juries are very strange.
But you know I didn't kill Mr. Rondeau, don't you?
Janice, dear, I can't have an opinion.
Not officially, of course, but...
You'll have to hurry, dear. Your lawyer's waiting. He wants to have a minute with you.
Yes, of course.
Janice, I want to be sure you understand what to do. If the verdict goes against us, try to bear up. I know that's hard, but don't go to pieces.
Go to pieces? After all this?
Just remember, we have plenty of grounds to demand a new trial. But if the verdict is not guilty, you must remember to thank the jury.
Thank them? For what, Mr. Layton? After all the misery I've been through, am I expected to show gratitude because they finally believe the truth?
Janice, you feel like this because you know that what happened in Rundio's apartment. But you must see it as it appeared to others. You'd been going to his place evenings.
To play the piano for him, nothing else.
I know. But he was paying for your music studies. And it's hard for people who don't love music to understand that he wasn't paying.
A man old enough to be my father.
But still a man. As the prosecution pointed out, he might have tried to frighten you with that gun.
I wasn't even in the room.
But your fingerprints were on the gun.
I handled it. I told you that. He showed me the gun. It was the latest addition to his collection. It was defective. The expert admitted that. It went off accidentally.
Janice, I believe you. I wouldn't have volunteered to take the case if I hadn't thought you were innocent. Now, you must take something from me on faith.
All right, Mr. Layton.
I want you to thank the jury if the verdict is right. Now, that strikes you as a bit of hypocritical exhibitionism, but it's expected. And it will help afterward, because anything you do that's out of the ordinary will be pounced upon by the newspapers and the public. And it will all help to keep this thing alive.
You mean, even after I'm acquitted, it won't end there?
Not right away. You'll have to live it down, Janice.
Then, no matter what the verdict, I've got a great future.
On a paper, Janice?
For my scrapbook? No, thanks. I'll remember it all.
Oh, no, you won't. You'll forget. It'll take a little time, but you will forget.
Will it be as easy as that?
It's over, Janice. You were acquitted. You thanked the jury, and very nicely, too. Now you can go home and sleep in a real bed.
Mr. Layton said he was going to drive me home.
Yes, he'll be here in just a minute. I'm going on ahead and get your apartment ready for you. Unless you'd rather not see any more police for a while.
Oh, you're not a policeman, Ruth. You're a friend.
I'll put that in my scrapbook. You just stand here a minute. Dan Layton will be along. I'll pick up some groceries.
Extra! Janice Kettner acquitted!
Third house on the left, Mr. Layton. No, don't stop. Look at all those people in front of my building.
Oh, curiosity seekers.
They've come to stare at me.
It'll only take a moment to get inside. I sent Ruth Doyle ahead to open your apartment.
I know. There she is now. Oh, Ruth, what...
We'd better drive on, Mr. Layton. Janice, listen. You'll have to come home with me for a while.
But why?
Your apartment has been rented.
Rented? But how could it be? I paid up to the end of the month, and it's my apartment.
I know, but there's another couple living there now. It'll take a few days for them to move out.
That isn't my concern. My landlady will simply have to take care of it today. How could she have rented it?
She didn't think you were coming back.
She thought I'd be...
Her nerves are all shot. Janice... Everything is going to be all right.
I'll go away. I'll leave this awful city. I won't stay here.
You aren't going anyplace except to bed. You're going to have a good night's sleep.
Oh, I wish I could go to sleep and never wake up. But I will wake up. You always do. Oh, I've even had breakfast. You should have wakened me, Ruth, when you got up.
Oh, not the way you were sleeping. How are you, honey?
Oh, better, I think.
No more silly business about leaving town?
No. Right now, I want to find a job and get back to work.
Oh, why don't you just lie around for a few weeks?
Well, I can't. I've got to have some money so I can begin paying Mr. Layton.
I wouldn't worry about that. I'm sure Mr. Layton isn't...
Oh, there's the doorbell, Ruth.
Probably the maid. Well, I've got to rush anyway. I was just checking up on you.
I don't know why you're being so good to me.
Go answer the door, you dope. Goodbye.
Good morning, Miss Kettner, isn't it?
Yes.
I was hoping maybe we could have a little talk, if it isn't too early for business, that is.
Business? But how did you know I was here?
Your lawyer gave me this address.
Oh, well, come in, please.
Thank you.
Please, sit down, Mr...
Welch. Here's my card. Oh,
Welch Artist Agency?
I don't see your piano, Miss Kettner.
Oh, I don't have it here. This apartment belongs to a friend. I'm just a guest.
Ah, I see. Well, no matter. I don't have to hear you play, Miss Kettner. I'd like to represent you in the music field. As a matter of fact, I already got an opening for you.
You mean play the piano? Professionally?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but I'm not a professional. I'm nowhere near ready for the concert stage.
Oh, sure. But how about playing popular piano?
Oh, but I've never played anywhere for pay. I'm really just a secretary. My music studies, well, it's merely been an ambition, a dream.
Now, don't you worry about anything. I got just the spot for you to start. 3-week engagement at $250 a week.
$250 a week?
Sounds good, huh? Your name and lights, Janice Kettner at the piano?
Oh, but I'd want to use a professional name.
Well, that's not exactly the idea, Miss Kettner. You see, until you build up your reputation as a pianist...
I think I'm beginning to understand. It's the notoriety of my trial you want to sell, isn't it?
Publicity.
And it isn't even necessary that I play the piano. I could stand on my head or tell some tired jokes or sing a song.
Well, you...
The main thing is to let people stare at me as if I were some sort of a freak.
Oh, no, no, no. Not that exactly, Miss Kettner.
Yes, that exactly. And how would you bill me, Mr. Welch? Appearing nightly? Janice Kettner, the acquitted murderer.
Simply a matter of capitalizing on...
I'm afraid you're wasting your time, Mr. Welch. I wouldn't be interested.
Oh. Well, if you should change your mind, I got a couple of other angles. He wouldn't have to appear in public if
Goodbye,
you just...
Goodbye, Mr. Welch.
Good. Bye.
Suppose you give me a little of your background. What experience have you had, Miss Johnson?
Well, a nearly 6-year secretarial experience. Receptionist, PBX.
Where have you worked?
The Apex Mortgage Company, and my last job was with a buying concern.
I see. Is your name really Miss Johnson?
Why, I... No.
I thought I recognized you when you came in.
So changing my name doesn't help. Oh, don't look so unhappy. I've been turned down at 7 other places today.
Well, you can't exactly blame them. Not many companies want that publicity, to say nothing of the distraction you'd cause among the other employees.
Don't apologize.
I'm sorry, but after all, you were in a front-page murder trial.
And found innocent by a jury of my peers. But that isn't enough. Now I have to be tried all over again by the general public.
Why don't you try another town, some place where you aren't known?
Thanks. Thanks for your suggestion.
Honey, you'll get a job yet.
8 offices, Ruth. All of them badly in need of a secretary. But they don't need Janice Kettner, the notorious Janice Kettner.
Maybe your lawyer can help.
No doubt. That little Welch person said Mr. Layton gave him this address.
He was lying. Dan Layton wouldn't do anything except what's best for you. And he'll do more.
No, I've accepted enough help.
Well, I don't think he feels that way.
I haven't paid him for defending me, and here I am imposing on you. But not for long. I can get money. You're darn right I can.
Janice, what are you going to do?
So I'm too much in the public eye. That's what one of them said. Too much publicity for our company. Very well. If I'm going to be a public figure, let's do it upright. Let's give it a real production. Mr. Welch? This is Janice Kettner. Yes. You said you knew ways of capitalizing on my publicity.
Janice, honey.
Yes, I've changed my mind. I'll listen to your proposition. Come over right away, Mr. Welch. You know the address.
We return now to the second act of Jury of My Peers, starring Phyllis Thaxter in the role of Janice Kettner. In a trying ordeal that has seemed almost like a nightmare, Janice Kettner has been unjustly accused of the murder of her elderly, wealthy patron and friend, Nicholas Rundio. She has been tried and acquitted of the charge. But Janice has found that it doesn't all end there. The public in general is unwilling to accept a person who has been charged with such a crime, and she is unable to get work. Finally, she turns to a Mr. Welch, who plans to exploit her experience through an entertainment contract in the apartment of her policewoman friend.
Mr. Welch, I believe you said you had an angle to earn money which wouldn't require my appearing in public.
I got it, Miss Kettner.
What is it, please?
The inside story of your trial for publication.
But I'm not a writer.
Don't worry about that. I got under contract a ghostwriter. Very handy with the words, but he can't create.
I see. Just what would I have to do?
Practically nothing. You tell him all the details. I'll personally think up an angle on it. He'll write the story. The Sunday supplements eat up stuff like that.
I don't doubt it.
We'll drag it out to about 5 installments. Pull out all the stops. Plenty of heartthrobs.
It isn't really that kind of a story.
Ah, we'll smaltz it up. Give them all the background on Nicholas Rondeau. You know, wealthy, retired stockbroker, bachelor, playboy, collected guns as a hobby, sponsored young lady music students, the kind of a sugar daddy every gal would like to have.
He wasn't like that at all. He was a kind, sweet old man, all alone in the world. He loved music. He would have sponsored anybody whom he thought had real talent, man or woman. He was never anything but a courtly, old-fashioned gentleman, and so lonely.
That's it. That's the angle. Look, we got this. Old boy, lots of dough, nothing to spend it on. And comes along a young, beautiful girl you should take a bow. And he falls for her. Falls hard, but he never tells her.
Mr. Welch,
he keeps it shut up inside, in here, hoping someday she'll go for him. Gives her plenty of time, but it don't happen. She doesn't go. He can't take it no longer, so he shoots himself.
He didn't. He wouldn't. It was an accident.
Say, how about his will? He left you some dough, didn't he?
There was a provision to take care of my musical studies. I'm not accepting it. Not one penny.
Good angle. We'll play that up, too. Lots of heart in it. Now, about the price. We ought to get easily $1,500, maybe $2,000.
Mr. Welch,
out of that, there'll be my commission, of course. I'll take the usual 10-20%. Then there's the writer, maybe $350 for him. All the rest
Janet,
of it...
I want to talk to you.
Oh, hello, Mr. Layton. Do you know Mr. Welch?
Glad to know you, Mr. Layton.
Janice, Ruth called me. I'm due in night court in 10 minutes, but I can't let you go through with this. You'll regret it the rest of your life.
No, look here, Mr. Layton.
You keep out of this. Janice, listen to
me. It's all right, Mr. Layton. I couldn't have gone through with it anyway.
Huh?
Mr. Welch, I'm sorry to have caused you all this inconvenience.
Well, now, look at
Goodbye, Mr. Welch.
Well, okay.
Janice.
I'm sorry, Mr. Layton.
Dan.
All right, Dan. I didn't know what I was doing. I was all mixed up. Oh, it's all so unfair. Thrown out of my apartment, people staring at me. Why, a girl even stopped me on the street today and asked me for my autograph. And nobody will give me a job.
Janice, darling, let me take care of you.
Dan, please, you've been so wonderful.
I love you, Janice. I want to take care of you. Will you marry me?
Oh, no, Dan.
Look, don't say anything right now. Think it over. And we'll talk about it tomorrow.
Dan, thank you. Thank you very much.
Janice, running away won't solve a thing. You've got to face it out. It's the only way.
I can't. I've got to leave town.
Honey, listen. When you were in that cell and in my charge, I often thought, there but for the grace of something or other is policewoman Doyle. I kept thinking of how so very easily our positions could be reversed.
Not you, Ruth.
I kept wondering how I'd bear up under it. And I knew I wouldn't. Tough as I thought I was, I knew I could never go through it the way you did.
Oh, that's nonsense.
That's why I was on your side. Watching you day after day, defying the prosecuting attorney, defying anybody to prove you killed Nicholas Rondeau. Oh, honey, you were so darn brave.
I'm not brave.
Not if you run away now.
It isn't just me, Ruth. Now there's Dan.
Oh, if it had been me, I wouldn't have let the man out of my sight.
Ruth, I can't marry him.
Somebody passed a new law when I wasn't looking?
Think how that would look. A lawyer married to a woman who's just been on trial for murder.
And acquitted.
Yes, just by the jury. My picture was in the paper again this evening. They'll never let it die till they've wrung out the last bit of sensationalism. What would that do to Dan's career? It could ruin him.
All right, don't marry him. But you still don't have to run away.
Well, if I don't go away, I will marry him. I love him, Ruth, and it wouldn't be fair.
Layton speaking.
Ruth Doyle, Mr. Layton.
Yes, Ruth.
I'm getting to be a regular stool pigeon. Janice is leaving town, Mr. Layton.
When?
Now. She's already gone. I called your place as soon as she left the house, but you were still in night court.
How long has she been gone?
An hour.
Does she have any money?
Not very much. Only what I could advance her on her piano. I'm supposed to sell it for her.
Well, then she'll probably have to travel by bus. I'll go right down to the station. Maybe I can head her off.
You better have a good case to present, Counselor.
I think I have. Thanks, Ruth. Janice? Janice? Janice, wait for me.
Shouldn't have followed me here, Dan. You can't make me change my mind.
Let me carry your bags for you. Where are you going?
Where nobody knows me. Where I can live a normal life.
Janice.
Please, don't tell me I should stay here and fight it out. I'm so tired.
I don't blame you, Janice. It's probably for the best. You'll be spared a lot of unhappiness and humiliation.
People staring at me.
And people like Mr. Welch.
Oh, I want to get a job and earn a living. To pick up a newspaper without finding a bad picture of myself looking back at me.
You're quite right.
You don't have to be so agreeable.
Well, I was going to say you may miss the big city.
Yes, I'll miss the city.
Still, in a small town, you might give piano lessons to children.
Oh, I don't think I'll do that.
Well, here we are. Don't forget to write to Ruth once in a while. She's very fond of you.
Yes, she's a wonderful person. I'll miss her terribly.
You might even drop me a card at Christmas time.
I'll miss you too, Dan. A lot.
Well, it'll be worth it. Better take a last look at the old hometown.
Dan?
Yes?
Dan, I want you to know I think you're wonderful.
Matter of opinion. Well, miss me a little, darling?
Oh, Dan. I will miss you. You and Ruth, everything.
It does seem like you can't run away just from the bad things. You've got to leave the good behind, too.
I don't want to go, Dan.
Well, then, stay. Marry me.
But your career. They'll talk about you, too.
Oh, a lawyer can always use publicity.
Oh, Dan, if you kissed me, nobody would pay any attention, would they? They'd think I was just catching the bus.
I wouldn't fool them. Your bus is gone.
Oh. Well, then they'd think I just got off the bus. They'll think I just got back.
Well, then, welcome home, darling.
Oh, Dan, it's so good to be home.
And so the curtain comes down on the final act of this week's Stars Over Hollywood show as presented by Carnation Evaporated Milk and starring Phyllis Thaxter. Before we hear news about next week's show, let's have a curtain call for our star. Phyllis, that was really a fine performance.
That's good to hear, Art. Thank you.
We mean it sincerely. Right now, we'd like to have you join us in our after-the-show custom here. It's coffee creamed to perfection with Carnation Evaporated Milk. Here you are, Phyllis. I hope you like it.
Oh, thanks. That's really good. But it's no surprise to me, Art. I've known all about Carnation ever since our daughter Susan was a tiny baby.
Well, then I certainly don't have to convince you that there's just no finer milk anywhere.
No, sir. We started Susan out on Carnation formula, and we've kept it on hand ever since.
Well, then, you're one of the millions of parents who've learned that there's no better start in life, no better foundation for good health than Carnation evaporated milk. You know, it's a fact that 8 out of 10 mothers who feed their babies Carnation say their doctors recommended it.
Well, that certainly speaks well for it.
Yes, Carnation is the milk every doctor knows. And now, Phyllis, in appreciation of your excellent performance, we'd like you to have this bouquet for your home. Red and white carnations, just like those pictured on every can of Carnation evaporated milk.
Oh, thanks ever so much, Art. And for now, goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye, Phyllis Thaxter. Next Saturday, Stars Over Hollywood will present Miss Mitzi Gaynor in a romantic play titled Call Me Love. And now here's Miss Gaynor.
As far as Chris is concerned, I might as well be in pigtails with a lollipop in one hand. Why must he always call me sister? Why can't he call me love?
Thank you, Mitzi Gaynor. We'll all be listening next week to hear you in this charming play. The story on today's Stars Over Hollywood presentation was written by Robert C. Dennis. Supporting Miss Thaxter were Les Tremaine as Dan, Paula Winslow, Lou Merrill, and Patrick McGeehan. The program was directed by Don Clark. Ladies, when you shop for groceries today, be sure you buy Carnation, the world's favorite brand of evaporated milk. No other form of milk comes in so handy, so many times, so many ways.
It's Carnation time when it's coffee time. It's Carnation time when you're cooking too. It's Carnation time at baby feeding time. The milk from contented cows for you. All around the clock, it's time for Carnation.
A word to all you mothers. If you'd like to hear your children ask for more milk, then start serving them Carnation malted milk today. Both extra delicious and extra nourishing, Carnation malted milk helps children maintain the vitality and good condition so important in resisting colds and flu. So get Carnation malted milk today at your favorite food store. And now for the Carnation Company and Stars Over Hollywood, this is Art Ballinger, suggesting that you be sure to see the George Burns and Gracie Allen television show, brought to you by Carnation Evaporated Milk. Tune in every Saturday to hear the world's greatest motion picture stars on Stars Over Hollywood. Next Saturday, we are proud to present Mitzi Gaynor in Call Me Love. Stay tuned now to hear City Hospital, which follows immediately over most of these stations. Stars Over Hollywood comes to you transcribed from our Hollywood studios and is heard in Canada over the Dominion Network of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. This is the CBS Radio Network.
Stars Over Hollywood on Tuned to Yesterday from March 27, 1954 on CBS. Phyllis Thaxter, the star of the radio play, known best for her movie work, in the year of that broadcast, she was mostly seen on television, in the Motorola Television Hour, the Ford Television Theater, and Robert Montgomery Presents. It's an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levinier. And now it's on to Escape, but not the CBS radio anthology series most listeners are accustomed to, but the NBC version that ran for a short season in 1944. This play from September 18th of that year, called From Autumn.
Stories of Escape. Escape. To get away as by flight, to break away, get free, or get clear from or out of detention, danger, or the like. To avoid or elude a threatened ill, to miss imminent pain, punishment, or misfortune, to issue from confinement or enclosure. Escape. Each week at this time, the National Broadcasting Company presents Escape, stories of deliverance from evil. Drama of both fiction and real life. Stories of men and women who, by their own actions, thoughts, and deeds, win their fight to escape. Tonight, Escape from Autumn. The hills were alive with color. From every slope, tapestries of gold and amber, fiery red and waning greens were bathed in the reflected glory of the setting autumn sun. Old Hank Morton leaned on the sprawling pile of rounded rocks that had once formed a boundary line between his land and that of his neighbor, James Evans. The day was almost over, and the slanting rays of sunlight caught the gray and brown stubble on his face with their glistening light. Old Hank was thinking, and anyone could have told that he didn't much relish his late afternoon thoughts. Hank's face was a barometer for his mind. Today, he was worried. Worried as he sensed the end of summer, thinking,
It ain't right, that's all. Just don't seem to be right. Of course, I suppose I'm being selfish and all that. But when a man's done all he could, and done pretty well according to most standards. I figure he ought to be able to have some say in a matter as important as this is. Like a man's own flesh and blood was being taken from him, and it doesn't...
Uncle Hank? Uncle Hank? Guess what? Just guess.
Here now, hold on there, young'un. Now, hold on.
Dick Mason's daddy is back home from war. He's come back for good.
Well, now that must make Dick feel pretty good, huh?
Yeah. He was at school today. Dick's father, I mean.
Uh-huh.
And he talked to us in assembly. It was awfully exciting. All about...
Well, was he all right? Not hurt, I mean?
Well, he had a cane. Limped a little. But he said he'd manage all right. He's a real hero. Gee, Dick's a lucky fella.
Well, how do you mean, Billy?
I'm having his father back home again. Gosh, I wish... Uncle Hank.
Yeah?
When do you think...
I know what you're going to ask me, Teddy.
Will it be for much longer?
Well, I hope not, youngster. You've been a brave boy for a long, long time.
I've missed him, Uncle Hank.
Well, of course you have. Me too. But nothing we can do about it, is there?
Nope. Uncle Hank?
Hmm?
What's the trouble?
Trouble? Oh, what do you mean, Penny?
I don't know. You seem so funny. Not like you were all summer, but sort of solemn. Are you mad at me?
Oh, heavens, no. Whatever gave you that idea, boy? Now, you get along with you now before I decide to exercise a little discipline now.
I'm going. Hurry up with your chores, Uncle Hank. I'm hungry.
That night, there was much animated conversation. Penny's first day at school provided more than enough after-supper talk until bedtime came along. And Hank was careful to listen with more than his usual attentiveness, careful to laugh and be gay when the occasion demanded. For Penny was aptly named, bright, alert, and the very echo of Hank's own moods. He had sensed the older man's preoccupation that afternoon in spite of his own excited gaiety. Later, after Penny had said his prayers and been tucked in bed, old Hank had sat up far past his bedtime, rocking gently in the old cherry wood rocker, drawing on a never more than half-lit pipe, thinking, always thinking.
My duty towards God and towards my neighbor. To love him as myself, and to do to all men as I would they should do unto me. I wonder if I've done my duty, James, to you, my neighbor. I guess you're James and Ellen Evans, huh? Well, I'm your neighbor, Hank Morton.
Oh, we're glad to meet you, sir.
Yes.
Here, now. None of that sure stuff. We're going to be neighbors, not distant acquaintances.
Oh, well, sorry. I didn't mean
to. You see, Hank, we're newlyweds.
Yeah, I know you are. And I don't aim to butt in, neither. But I just had to say hello and welcome you to our hills. I'm a bachelor myself, but if there's anything you need or want, just ask me. I've lived all my life here, and I love it. And I want you folks to love your new home as much as I do. That's all.
Thank you, Hank. I know we shall. And you're going to be our very first friend.
Yes, sir. Hank. and thanks for greeting us like this. It's swell.
But, Hank, darling, you shouldn't have done that.
Why not? You've been keeping me in butter and eggs for weeks. What's a few logs of wood?
A back-breaking chore.
Oh, not for me. That's how I keep limber these days. When the time comes that I can't split a cord of wood, well, I'll know that I'm done for.
Oh, you're a dear. Tell you what, first fire we make, you're going to share it with us.
I hoped you'd say that, Ellen. I was aiming for an invitation. And I'm going to accept. Oh, well, that is if... You're sure James won't be too jealous.
Oh, Hank, you're wonderful.
Looks like this is the real thing, Hank.
Well, she's being a real fighter, James.
I'd better see if I can't get a hold of Dr. Morse.
Well, you'll do nothing of the sort. The wires are down to the count of the storm. I've already tried to reach up my phone.
Oh. Well, then I'll have to go
on. You'll stay here with Ellen. She needs you. I'll go into town and bring him out with me.
But the roads are icy, Hank, and there may be drifts, but with all this wind...
I know my way into town and out backwards, James. Now, you keep Ellen warm. Get some water on to boil, and I'll be back with Doc just as soon as possible.
I don't know what to say, Hank, or how to thank
well,
you.
Don't thank me yet. Just hope I get back in time. Now, James.
Yeah?
Tell Ellen I love her, too. Tell her to keep her chin up. Thank God. In time. James, is it a boy or...
It's all over. A boy.
Here, sit down. You look as though you needed a doctor. A boy, huh?
It's all over. A boy. And Ellen.
James. Is she all right? Is Ellen all right?
It's all over. For Ellen. She's dead. Why, God? Tell me why.
Slowly, Hank Morton tapped out his pipe, rose from the rocker, turned out the light, and carefully made his way to bed. He shivered as he quickly undressed in the chill autumn night. He was getting old, he reflected. If only he could stop thinking about James and Ellen, gone so soon, long before her time, and Penny, but mostly about James, his neighbor.
Oh, sure, I could appeal it, of course, Hank, but I couldn't do that, not and stay honest with myself.
Well, I know how you feel, yes. I wish I was a little younger, that's all.
Oh, you did your share in the last scrap. Now it's my turn now, and I don't mean to skip it.
Well, you have to be true to yourself, James. If you believe in what you're going to do, go ahead and do it. But what about Penny?
Well, if he were any older, I'd fight to stay home and bring him up right, but... Well, he's just a kid, and maybe this won't mean too much heartache now.
Penny's got a lot of spring and bounce. Don't you worry about him, James. Besides,
I wanted to talk to you about that, Hank. That it doesn't seem right that you should be burdening yourself with bringing up a youngster while I'm in service.
Oh, don't seem right, eh? And who could do it any better?
Oh, whoa there. Now, I didn't mean
well,
to...
Who's been teaching him to fish and heist to sail in the Sound? Who's been giving him little odds and ends of chores so that he can make himself useful around the place, huh?
Well, I'm sorry, Hank. I'm not ungrateful. Well, I only wanted you to know
you
that
send
I...
that boy to any relatives, and I'll... Hank. I don't know what I'll do. Besides, maybe I'm being presumptuous, James, but I think Ellen would want him to grow up here, right at home. Where he first saw daylight.
You've made me very happy, Hank. I know what Ellen would have wanted. Now that I know you want it that way, too, that's how it'll be. Thank God for you, neighbor.
The dawn came all too soon, carrying in its wake a tingling scent of upstate mountaintops and a hint of frosts to come. Both Penny and Hank woke early, did their chores briskly, and sat down to a steaming hot New England breakfast.
Swell elegant.
Yeah. Well, a growing body needs plenty of food. It's got to be good food, or else you wouldn't have no use for it, huh?
You're growing too, Uncle Hank, aren't you?
Well, I reckon so, Penny. Yeah, just like an old oak tree.
An oak tree?
Sure. Or a maple, or elm. Well, any kind of tree you want, Dave.
Oh, you're kidding, Uncle Hank.
Oh, no, sirree, Bob, I'm not, no.
How does it feel to be as old as you are?
Do you really think I'm old?
Well, not exactly. But you're lots older than I am.
Yeah, I reckon I am. I reckon, yeah. Well, but that don't make us any less friends, does it?
No, sirree. Next to my daddy, you're the only person I really like. But tell me, how does it feel to be... Well, you know.
Well, like I told the young'un, like a tree must feel. Yeah, when you're young, like you, you feel like a sapling. Your roots ain't so long, they don't go so deep into the soil. But they're deep enough so as you can get nourishment, all the things you need for living out of the soil. And you bend in the wind. And if you're not too careful, the hot sun or the cold frost will blight you. It'll make you wither away before your time. That's how you feel when you're in the spring of life. Then comes summer. Your leaves fill out and they become a handsome green. A tree in summertime is something like your Daddy James. A grown man.
Gosh, Uncle Hank. I never thought... Gee.
Yeah, then comes autumn, Penny. Your roots are firm and deep, embedded and twisted in the earth. You still get life and nourishment, but the time comes when life is drained out of your veins. Sun grows cooler. The winds are chill. And even though your bark is thick and hard, you feel the change.
But trees are pretty in autumn.
Oh, yeah. You're right, Penny. Yes. There is a beauty that comes with age. Yeah. Sort of a last-ditch fight that you put up before you know that old winter will get you. Makes a swell show for a while. And then...
Yes, Uncle Hank?
Then comes winter.
Go on. Tell me what it feels like.
No. I couldn't if I wanted to. I'm not that old. Besides, you're going to have to step brisk pace if you're intended to get to school before that old school bell rings. Go on now. Along with you. Go on.
The sun was rising higher in the heavens. Outside was peace, contentment, and rich fulfillment in harvest. But inside the house, it was much darker. Penny had gone to school. Old Hank sat quietly at the breakfast table, thinking again. His gnarled fingers reached into one of the pockets of the tattered old vest, which he seldom went without. They clutched a crumpled piece of paper, well read, only a few days old, but so well memorized he could almost hear the words coming from James' lips.
Old neighbor, I don't know how to tell you this in words. All the gratitude I've stored up for years just won't seem to flow into sentences and grammatical construction. I wish I could express all the warm things I feel in my heart for you and what you've done for Penny and me. But I can't. And that brings me to a rather painful subject, Hank. The story of me. A story that has an ending. You see, old friend, I've been banged up a bit. And I won't be coming home. The medics don't give me much longer. A week or so, that's all. Nothing I can do about it. I fought. I'm still fighting. But some things must take their course. just like the rivers which end up in the sea. No matter how their course may be changed,
they make their way to their everlasting home. It's my turn now. Promise me you'll tell Penny when the telegram comes. Maybe I've done you wrong by telling you this now, but somehow I feel that you should know first. We'll give you a chance to think over what and how to tell the youngster. Goodbye, Hank. I'll leave you with many burdens, more than you deserve to be laden with. Maybe they be light for your shoulders. Your loving friend and neighbor, James. Huh? Oh. Hello, Elmer.
Morning, Hank.
Yeah, fine day. Fine out of day, huh?
Yep, couldn't be better. Oh, Hank, I've got a...
Got a wire for me?
Afraid I have. Came ringing out from town.
So it's come at last. Too soon.
Ain't you going to open it?
Huh? Oh, well, no, Elmer. Not yet a while, no. I know what it says.
I'm sorry. Awful sorry, Hank.
Yeah, me too. James was a fine man.
You ain't going to tell the youngster for a while, are you?
Not tell Penny?
He's pretty young. You wouldn't want to hurt him more than necessary.
Well, you're wrong about that, Elmer. I am going to tell him.
But, Hank, it is...
It wouldn't be fair not to. Neither to James nor to Penny.
You think it's wise, Hank?
It's the only thing to do, Elmer. The thing is... Well, how to do it?
You're awful solemn again, Uncle Hank.
Oh, am I, Penny?
Yeah. Please... I wish there was something I could do to make you cheer up.
Oh, there now, I'm sorry, young'un. It's the coming of winter, I guess. Hey, that reminds me, too. Never did finish that story of mine about growing old like a tree, did I?
Nope.
Well, I guess I will now. Yeah. You see, Penny, there are times when my story don't hold good. You see, sometimes a man has more than one job to do here on Earth. Maybe two big jobs. He finishes one. And God says, that's enough. The man's done his share. Maybe the other job is left undone. But there's always someone else to tend to it as part of his old job. Sometimes, too, the forest gets... all overcrowded. Some trees die so that others can reach the light, grow, live. That's the thing about winter, Penny. Sometimes it comes in a man's prime.
I understand.
Do you, boy? Are you sure?
Yes, Uncle Hank.
A telegram came today.
What? Where from? Who sent it?
Here, young. I haven't opened it. Maybe you'd better do it for me.
All right. The War Department regrets. Oh, Uncle Hank. It's Daddy. James. He's gone.
Yes, son. You see, it's like I was telling you. Sometimes a man's job is done in his prime. Sometimes, when he goes, a little more light and sun shines on those of us left behind. A little more life for us.
For a moment, nothing more was said. Then Penny stood up, walked to the door, and went out into the autumn night. Old Hank made as if to follow him, and then thought better of it. A young man's grief is a solitary thing. There'd be time to share it and to forget it. Hank busied himself about the house, tidying up the supper dishes, putting another log or two on the cheerful fire. He knew Penny would be all right. And now, for the first time in many months, he felt younger. His new burdens had overthrown the nagging load of the autumn of old age. Hank looked up at the autumn sky. Then he went inside, closed the door, and sat by the fire, waiting for Penny. You have heard Escape from Autumn, written by Alan M. Fishburne and directed by Norman Felton. The National Broadcasting Company has presented another story of Escape. Cliff Subir was heard as Hank, Leonard Smith as Penny, Ralph Camargo played James. Your narrator is Cleve Kirby. And same station, NBC will bring you Escape from Royalty. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Escape on Tuned to Yesterday from September 18, 1944, the NBC version of the program. The show would close in 1944, and CBS would begin a new anthology series under that same title as of July 1947. And that brings to a close this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVunier. Thanks for listening.